Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Thursday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. It is a sweltering Thursday, and it is day one of fall football practice here on the Plains. And we had the opportunity to stand as close to air conditioners as we could today and watch some of the workouts. Dan and I looking for the coolest spots as we're there on the shady side of the practice facility today.
Can I just say, first of all, with Justin Ferguson in the house, this is the coolest spot.
It is a very cool spot, literally.
No, yeah, and they wonder why we keep the lights low.
Man, Andy's always like, why do you guys like the lights? And it's cooler with the lights down.
Yeah, absolutely, and it eases into the when we switch to Quiet Storm music.
And we're also trying to conserve the energy. You know that's what we're all about.
We switched to easy listening after Smooth Jazz when the show that's right. Steely Dan, Gaucho coming up on. It is an unbelievably hot day. The guys are working as hard as ever out there. And how about shout out to the guy squeezing the cold, wet rag?
Yeah.
Berg, did you see my man, the juicer?
Dan's trying to get one himself.
I'm
next.
The problem is you got to walk through the complex afterward, right? And I'm sure I'd get in trouble there unless they give me a couple towels or something. Whenever players are taking their water break, they got a guy with a rag of ice cold water.
And he's earning his way through school.
And he's wringing that thing out on top of these players and giving them a little blast of cold on top of the hydration. And it's unbelievably hot out there. I'm sure that as we get a little bit closer to the season, things will calm down a little bit, Bill. But
what, temperature wise?
I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know about that. I don't know about that. I'm sure you can guess what I did after practice.
I'm sure you were out there in the yard or the pool.
I went home, cannonball
into the pool.
I went home, had to cut the backyard and the side yards. And again, if I didn't have a pool, I'd probably be dead in the yard right now. I mean, it is brutal. It really is. Be careful if you have to be out there. I would strongly advise, if you're going to have to be out there, that you have as much liquid to hydrate and, if possible, to fall in. I mean, you may not be able to have, an ice bath.
Maybe.
But, man, it is nice to have a cool pool. My pool has just now topped the 80-degree mark because of all the shade that we have around it. Let me tell you, I complain about it sometimes for all the debris and stuff that's around the pool. But man, when the weather is like this, it is so nice to be able to. I feel like I almost hear the sizzle when I hit the pool.
I ran into our old buddy Jarrell Bostrom on the way back to my parking spot after practice, and he told me, I'm not necessarily sure he was headed straight there. But he said this is an ice bath day.
No question.
I mean, the line's going to be like, Deadpool and Wolverine lines from last Thursday, right? Like that's what it's going to be like for the ice bath when practice is over. It's another sign that the off season is rapidly ending, and we're going to be. I mean, it's August. We're going to be back to normal in fall football coming up in just a couple of weeks.
Well, Hugh Freeze met with the media earlier today. Justin Ferguson, as you mentioned, from the Auburn Observer, with us here in the studio. Ferg, how's it going, man?
Doing well, like y'all. Finally feeling like I've recovered from being in the heat for a little over an hour. And by the way, over an hour, the access tremendous. Continues to be fantastic.
Hugh Freeze doesn't have a problem with it, and it is great that we get the access that we have gotten. Yes, I mean, we're expecting it to start around 10:45. I went to the house. By the time I got back, everybody's outside, but we were out until around close to 11:30 today.
I thought I've got some time to make some calls related to yesterday's kerfluffle. I thought maybe I can handle that. And I notice mid call, I get a text from Justin saying, "Hey, we're out here." By the way, shout out Justin for letting me know. So I was going to come back at 10:45.
I was coming back at around 10:15, and it's like, oh man, I already missed something. But we will talk about what we saw. I wanted to say though, One of the things that appeared pretty obvious from watching some of the practice today is one of the things that Hugh Freeze said during his press conference today, is that he expected the team to be sharp, that they had done all the installs. It's not like last year. They're not learning each other and the system, things like that. And, Justin, I thought they looked much better than than usual, than you usually see a team in its first day of fall practice.
Yeah, I think the word for today is it continues to be familiarity. I mean, this is something Dan brought up in his question to Freeze today, and it's something we've talked about a lot. It's just, you know, think about it this way. Last year at this time, the guy, I mean, this is just two examples, but the guy who ended up being Auburn's starting quarterback and the guy who ended up being Auburn's top pass rusher were brand new.
Right.
They had not gone through a single practice yet. Now, both of those guys are back a lot more. Today, it was interesting because you had a handful of transfers, not a ton, but a few, and then a few true freshmen you hadn't seen before, but everybody else was here in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is that continuity, that familiarity. Things should have been sharper today. It did look sharper for sure. And I think that was that's the whole thing with Freeze today when he talked about looking at this year as a restart, you know, wanting to move on.
Don't want to talk about last year.
Don't want anymore to talk about last
year. I don't blame him.
I get it.
Yeah, and pretty honest about how disappointed he was in last season and felt like he could have done a lot better in those areas. So you look at it as a clean slate, but also you look for Auburn and it's like, okay, you're not having to start from near scratch, you know, and I think you saw some of that today in practice. And I think it popped up to me. I think it was most evident when the ball was in the air and throwing it, and specifically with Peyton Thorne.
Did you see a drop?
I saw a few, not a ton.
I saw a few passes that weren't.
Saw some drops from the tight ends, but not a ton.
The receivers
look good.
Really look good.
What's crazy about that though is that I feel like the one spot where you would understand a lack of familiarity.
Yeah.
Is receiver and quarterback, because the quarterback and receiver relationship, because so many of these receivers weren't on the team,
sure,
you know, as of January.
And you're going against air right now, so like again, it's not the hardest thing in the world.
Right.
But I do think the summer work was very important for those guys. Also thought today Peyton Thorne looked pretty sharp.
I thought he looked very sharp today.
The guys behind him, not as sharp.
No.
You had balls thrown behind. It's just the accuracy wasn't really there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just wasn't great for those guys. But I think you continue to kind of, and if any of you are out there still on the fence or still being like, why is it Peyton Thorne? I think it's just simply because he is the best option. And he should be Auburn's best option,
sure,
at this point because of the experience he's had. But yeah, I mean, I thought it was a pretty sharp day. You know, obviously, you know, not in pads. It's football. It's diet football out there right now. But I thought it was a good look, and I wrote about it a good bit in my practice observations today. Really impressed with Perry Thompson. I know a lot of people were interested in watching him today for the first time.
He moves well. He catches the ball well.
I mean, you're talking about a guy who's 6'3", and you know, I think he's listed, 228 or something like that. He's a big guy. He moves very, very well.
Yes, he does.
I think he's faster than Cam Coleman. I think he's a little more explosive than Cam, just in terms of his movement. Now, obviously, what separates Cam as a receiver is his ball skills and the hands and all that. We will see what that looks like with Perry. But was very impressed watching Perry Thompson move. Because, I mean, in high school, or in his high school days, I had seen Cam play a few times.
Mm-hmm.
I had never gotten a chance to see Perry play live. So this was my first time to kind of get eyes on him in
person.
Right,
first time in person.
Great. I mean, just what you saw from him in the high school ranks and what the scouting report is on him is absolutely true. This is a big dude who runs really, really well. He might not be as – and right now he's not as polished or as sharp with what Auburn wants him to do at wide receiver as a guy like Cam, because he wasn't here in the spring. But when you talk about the tools just right off the bat, looks really, really good. And you know, as Freeze said today when I asked him about, like, okay, you've had some true freshman receivers play really well, you know, in year one. What does that take? And the first thing he says, well, you got to have the skill set. And I think the big thing with their guys that they brought in, and I would also throw in Bryce Kane and Malcolm Simmons as well, they look the part. That was his thing on Perry Thompson today. Like, he looks like an SEC receiver. He looks like the guys that Auburn should be getting more often, him and Cam both. And I think he looked pretty good today. And I also thought, you know, a lot of rotation, a lot of trying guys out in different spots. It looked to me, and this might just be you know, the time I saw him do this, you know, might not have done this the rest of the time, but the few times I was over with the, you know, watching the full offense, it felt like they were trying to get Perry a little bit more, yes, a little bit more, a little bit more each time. He was rotating a lot more.
Trying to get him caught up. Yep. Now, the other guy that it was hard not to notice today was Keandre Lambert-Smith. Dre.
Yeah.
I mean, he looked really smooth. He did. I mean, you know the word? All right, so a word that I've used quite a few times this summer, Hugh Freeze used twice today, comfortable. He looked comfortable out there today with Auburn in its first day of practice. Dre Lambert-Smith did. And I saw him also talking with Perry Thompson. It's like he spent a little time talking with Perry and giving him some pointers. I thought that was really nice to see a newcomer, yep, but who's a veteran, an experienced guy, sort of taking Perry Thompson under his wing.
And first team offense from the very, yes, I mean, the very first thing we saw, he was out there playing that flanker role. I think Cam Coleman, Keandre Lambert-Smith, Robert Lewis was the first, yep, three receivers out. I think that's going to be your group this year. It's interesting to see what kind of shuffles and falls in there. They had Perry playing more of that flanker role today, which I thought was interesting. There was a time during a rotation where, and I know Auburn fans get excited about this, thinking about the future. At one point in time, there was a rotation that they had where the quarterback was Walker White, the running back was Jeremiah Cobb. You had Cam Coleman, Perry Thompson, and Bryce Kane all on the field at the same time. Mm-hmm. So those are all freshmen except for Cobb, who's a sophomore. And then you had Rico Walker at tight end. So it was like all underclassmen. Look, I mean, just trying to get a lot of those guys reps. But I thought that was a really impressive. And here's the other couple. I mean, if we're just talking about people who impressed me, it took me a while to realize who it was because he wasn't in a non-contact jersey like he was all spring. Sam Jackson's fast.
He is.
He is. Like, he moves his legs just straight up quicker. Like, you can tell a real difference. Him and Bryce Kane, I think they just move different than the rest.
The Sam Jackson really thing came through. I mean, we had conversations about this when he was Cal's quarterback, and we were talking about the way he was running, and the accuracy was up and down as a passer, and there were multiple. I mean, not like Cal had runaway success with any of the other quarterbacks last year, but when Sam Jackson was a quarterback threatening with his legs for Cal, we talked about how explosive he was. So to see that transition, we learned that he's living with Peyton Thorne, and they've been working together all offseason. They, of course, knew each other from the high school days. So, it's, you know, it wouldn't be all that shocking to see Sam Jackson make, you know, and he's the sleeper acquisition of the bunch because the other guys were.
Of the transfers, yes.
Or even of the, I mean, it's not like there's a sleeper freshman.
No, you're right. You're right, because the other freshman, I liked what we saw out of Malcolm Simmons, too. I mean, he appears bigger.
It seemed like, I would say in the case of Simmons and to an extent Kane, I do wonder, you know, if there was a game next week, would they struggle for reps at receiver compared to the other two freshmen? It seemed like Coleman and Thompson were, and I don't know. I mean, it's tough to get.
And Caleb Burton caught the ball well today.
I was going to say, I mean, Caleb and Camden seemed to be the guys next up with Sam, right? Like that seemed to be your second. I mean, you mentioned
it was. That's exactly.
Well, actually. Well, no. Where would Perry fit in there? Because there's you mentioned the first three at receiver were Lewis, Lambert-Smith, and Cam Coleman.
Yeah.
Did you get a sense of who the second three were at receiver? Because I thought
Sam Jackson, Cannon Brown, and
Caleb Burton.
Caleb Burton.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I said. That's
so
what we saw.
And then Perry Simmons and Kane would have been.
Yeah, would have been in that third.
Would have been in that third mix. Mm-hmm. And I do want. Yeah, I guess in the case of those three freshman receivers, especially early on, mm-hmm, it could be, there's. How many receivers do you play?
Great right? situation.
I mean, it's great.
If it's tough, mm-hmm, for them to break into the immediate rotation, that tells you how much the receiver core has been upgraded.
I still imagine there would be a desire to get them reps and sort
I
of.
I mean,
get...
Freeze said today that it wouldn't surprise them if all of them contributed this year.
No, it wouldn't surprise me either. All right, so and I was I thought about this because we talked about it the other day.
Is this going to be about running back?
No, no, no.
Okay, because I was going to
ask another question, but then but we ran out of time, mm-hmm. and something that we weren't able to see today. I'm really interested in who's going to be back for kick returns, for kickoff returns.
Yeah, they didn't work on any of that out there. And
that's something I would have liked to
have
heard.
Worked on it some in the spring. That would be my pick if I had to put anything down on somebody right now.
I figure a running back.
Maybe Jeremiah Cobb. He did some kick return in high school. He was really good at it. Kane, Cobb. Then you start trying to figure out maybe a Sam Jackson. I mean, I'm just trying to think straight line speed at this point. And
Burton, Alston.
Spooty Kite, maybe. No, yeah. Not Alston. Austin's too much of a bruiser at this point in his career.
Well, no, I do wonder, too. I mean, I guess with Cobb, if it's an opportunity to get him an extra touch.
You do have Sean Jackson back.
Yeah, Sean. That was one I was going to say a couple things about running back.
We're out there, and it's like, and I'm looking, and it's, oh, wait, he's back.
He's back.
He wasn't here. He's back. Sean Jackson is a monster.
Mm-hmm.
No, he is a wrecking ball of a running back, but there's also a scholarship running back that we learned about earlier today.
Yeah, Justin Jones.
Well earned. Justin Jones has been doing great work. He was Scout Team Player of the Year a couple years ago for Auburn.
Well, obviously, special teams every game last year.
Yeah, him and Griffin Speaks, Auburn High kid, getting a scholarship. So congrats to both of those guys. I think they're going to be just fine at running back, though. And,
there's a reason we talk about other positions more. There's more intrigue at those positions. Yeah. I feel like if you ask Hugh Freeze.
They might end up slapping the non-contact jersey on Jarquez and maybe Damari as well at some point this fall.
If you ask Hugh Freeze, if he felt as good at every position as he feels at running back. Auburn would be
looking
like a postseason team in everyone's minds right now. I mean, so that's where
running back and tight end, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple spots where they've done an excellent job recruting and developing and retaining some of the guys already there.
And Freeze said today, I thought it was an interesting kind of big picture quote too. And he just said, I think the tone of the season is going to depend on how the young receivers and the young DBs play. And I think that is true. You know, speaking of those young DBs, thought Spooty Kite looked pretty good. Kind of the common third.
See,
third
he looks like
today.
That next guy.
Yeah, you need to have a third one out there. J.C. Hart in the mix there as well. Jay Crawford. We know now that Jacquez Robinson, the transfer from Colorado, is going to play nickel. That's where he played the majority of his time.
He's a big nickel.
Big guy. Yeah, real big guy. Good player. I think a good depth piece to have for sure. You've got Caleb Harris was playing some nickel today. I thought that was interesting. Probably the most intriguing part about the one that I didn't see coming was Laquan Robinson at linebacker. And I looked up and I was like, what's number three doing with the inside linebackers? And then I just kept watching for a little bit, and yeah, sure enough. And I don't know if that's kind of like a money backer, dime backer kind of situation for him, but yeah.
I mean, it's right now. I mean, we were just talking about him yesterday. I mean, the fact that here's a guy that came in, a highly touted JUCO guy, but he looked a little lost last spring. So maybe this is somewhere where you can use just his abilities as that
role,
that will linebacker or somebody that can either put some pressure or do a little coverage, but not have all the responsibilities there of that safety.
Not necessarily position changes, but things that you kind of know a little bit more for sure now of some guys in different spots. Morris Williams playing more defensive end than actual buck. I think they even changed that in the roster.
I think he's a defensive lineman. TJ Lindsey is definitely a tackle.
Yeah, he's near three bills now. Big guy. Mm-hmm. I also, you're going with guys that were impressive today. Kieron Crawford is physically very impressive. Got a great wingspan. Looks like, and that's the thing with Crawford, which I when you look at Crawford's story and he was a basketball player until a senior in high school. Somebody convinced him to go out for football, and 2 years later he ends up being one of the better edge rushers in the Sun Belt. That makes sense when you look at him, because I could definitely see somebody looking at him, just watching him today, and be like, yeah, you should probably play football. You would be pretty good at this. He's got that great wingspan. I thought he looked really impressive, moved well.
And he was sort of positionless, as I guess 6'4", I mean, there are basketball players help that are productive at 6'4", but he was sort of a bruising forward, is my understanding, as a high school player.
Undersized forward,
tough to really contribute at the even at the Division I level as a 6'4" post or under the basket. As a football player, his size is absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
We'll talk more about our observations about Hugh Freeze's comments at his press conference. Love for you to join in, and you can do so by calling the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. That number is 334-321-1390.
We'll be back.
All right, stick with us. We're right back here on The Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. And who have we got?
Terry
is on the line. Hey, Terry.
Hey, good afternoon, Bill, Dan, Justin. How y'all doing today?
Doing fine.
Great. Yeah, Bill, you kind of stole my question. I was curious what the return game was going to look like myself. Punt returns, kickoff returns, that such thing.
And punt I return, I would expect, it's hard to imagine Keontae Scott's not going to be back there again.
When he's healthy, yeah.
One of the better punt returners around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch because with all that talent, you got to get them on the field somehow.
Absolutely, and I was curious. Yeah, if when you look at kick return, maybe that is a way to get a guy like Bryce Kane, maybe even a Malcolm Simmons, like into the mix. I keep going back, Bill, to the thing I think of the most when I think of Malcolm Simmons, and this might be just too simplistic of it, but when I see him, he had all those jump state records. And he's such a great athlete. He can do all these things really well. He just reminds me of Noah Igbinoghi from an athletic perspective. And that's what Noah was. Noah started off as a receiver, but freak athlete, great return man. Like, I wonder if you could start him on that.
I think a little
path.
Of Noah. I think a little of Courtney Taylor.
I can see. Yep. I can see that as
Courtney was an outstanding basketball player, too. So
yeah. So I think Malcolm Simmons and Bryce Kane would be two really good options to try to throw back there if you're Auburn.
Guys wouldn't mind. I'll listen off the air, but I'd like to know what jersey number some of these guys are going to wear, like Thompson, some of those guys.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
You guys have a wonderful day.
All right, yeah, thanks for the call. Speaking of jersey numbers, Damari Alston with a new number
Damari
today.
Alston with a new number. They announced that change earlier this week. He's wearing 0. He's changing from 22. Perry Thompson's 3.
Right.
Malcolm Simmons is 16. Trying to think of who.
New guys. You've got your...
Oh, you got big Isaiah Rakes wearing 22 now. Which I thought was funny.
Yeah.
That is a large human being.
I saw that
22.
One before Damari's had changed. I thought, well, he's going to be the defensive 22.
Yep.
You won't have any trouble distinguishing
if
it's Damari or Isaiah.
Yeah, Isaiah Rakes wearing 22.
Let's see. You've got Jaquez Robinson's wearing 30.
Kane's the single digit, right?
He was already here, though.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, that's right. Oh, you're talking about the new guys.
Yeah, we're talking about
DeAndre Carter's. DeAndre Carter had a
78.
Yeah, I think
big,
that's right.
Big Drake
good,
Carter.
Good,
big Drake
good
Carter.
Grief, yeah. He's massive.
Yeah.
And I know no one asked this question, but there are a couple walk-ons on the offensive line this year that are huge. Because usually when you think walk-on offensive lineman,
usually you think 260.
Yeah, maybe guys who are like 6'4", 6'3", you know, just guys to guys.
Yeah, either stumpy guys or
there's the kid with three names on the offensive line. The walk on, he's huge.
John Henry Flatt.
Yeah, he's listed.
I'm looking at the roster. 6'6", 311.
Yeah, that is a monster offensive lineman who's a walk on. Yeah,
that's about 4 inches taller and 80 pounds heavier than the walk on offensive lineman.
Philip Bleedy's 92. Is that right? I think I'm trying to think of the guys who are new on the team.
96.
Kieran Crawford is 24, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, because
I'm not familiar with
Jay Crawford's 23.
Yeah.
Late stage Kobe number, going with the second era Kobe Bryant.
I do like 24 on the edge rusher.
Finaje Gotay's 38.
38, yeah, that was the other one I was trying to think of. But yeah, this is it'd be an interesting group. Who is it? Somebody's back to their old number again. Colby Wooden's back to his old number.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yeah. I think he's at 21 again.
Bill,
right?
Bill asked a question. Speaking of Colby, Bill asked a question.
Not Colby, his brother. Caleb. Sorry, Caleb. My bad.
Speaking of Caleb, I did too. Speaking of defensive backs like Caleb Wooden, you were sort of asked. I mean, that's one of. Don't want to say weakness, but that's a possible vulnerability for Auburn. They are really hoping that they're. I imagine they're really hoping that, especially early, they can keep their experienced guys at defensive back healthy. Because beyond Keontae and Champ and Kayan, you've got guys who really haven't played very much at all. And at safety,
it's crazy. Kayan and Champ haven't played that much.
They were able to get on the field last year because of injuries.
I think if you could say 23, 24 starters on offense and defense, you know, you have a nickel on defense. Well, I guess you know, you wouldn't. Or let's say 22, because you know you'd only have two linebackers in this scenario. I think if you had to pick 22 starters for Auburn in week one, I think you'd feel good to great about. I would feel good to great about 18 or 19 of them. One of the few that I think is a true battle, a true competition that's up for grabs is Caleb Wooden and Sylvester Smith at the safety spot next to Buck Thompson. That is a battle. I saw both of those guys work with the first team defense on throughout today's practice.
Seems to be the most compelling battle on the defensive side of the ball, because I would imagine
who's going to be the defensive tackle? Yeah, those guys are going to play.
That's what I was going to say.
Going to be the first out there. Yeah,
the rotation could be so big on the defensive line that you're talking about. Yeah,
Jason Jones and it was Gage Keys and Trill Carter.
Trill was also
with some Jason Jones.
Trill was out there. I would say more than just about. I mean, Keldrick Falk aside.
Keldrick Falk. Did y'all see or hear about Keldrick? He broke a sled.
No.
Yeah, that's just he does stuff like that. Like he does stuff like that. He is he's impressive, man. And there were a couple of times when they were going one on one. They were doing one on ones with offensive line, and he wasn't getting the starters on the offensive line. He was getting some second team guys. Demolishing them.
Enjoy Keldrick Falk while you can. That's
probably
going to
be. It's probably going to be this year or next year. That'll do.
Two more seasons.
I'm not this year or next. Yeah, not to start counting down the days or anything. But enjoy this guy in Auburn while you can, because I do say that,
and then remember that Derrick Brown came back. So you know, fourth years are possible for any of these guys.
But he is. He's
something different.
He looks to be on the path. Talked at media days about. I mean, taking so many things from Marcus about how to prepare yourself for the pros, and Marcus was learning from pros himself as a defensive.
Let me tell you those edge rushing spots. You got Buck, you got Jalen McLeod, and probably Keyron Crawford is your one and two right there. And then that defensive end spot, it's looking right now to me like Kelder Falk and then Amaris Williams. And that is, I mean, when you think about the talent, you got two guys there at defensive end that were five-star caliber talents coming out of high school. Then over at Buck, you've got two super productive transfers who made that jump, and I think that's a good blend of
talented freshman or two, true freshman or two behind those.
I was going
to
say front seven. Who could? Before I know, we got
your other defensive end is Zeke Walker. It looks like the Bucks.
Jamonte
Waller and Joe Phillips in it. Both rotating in pretty well.
I was going to say, teams. I mean, there's any number you could choose in the front seven. I would think Riddick and Phillips strike me as guys where it's just going to be tough to keep them off the field. Like, I mean, we'll see. I mean, there's veterans out there too, but those two guys just, I mean, it just seems a little bit different. And there's more you could choose
there was a moment where it looked like they were putting out like a third down package out there. And Keldrick inside, and I can't remember who the other one was. It might have been Gage Keys as well.
Yeah, I think it was.
And then Keyron and Jalen at Buck are on the standing up on the outside.
That's a pretty good group to get
fast.
After a quarterback.
That is fast. I mean, Gage Keys, who, if you look at his Kansas tape, like he's got some real ability to get into the backfield. I think he had him and Philip Bleedy both had double digit pressures and run stops last season. So I was interested in Bleedy and interested in those guys. You know, some of those newcomers, Gote was another one today. You could tell they're new. They're having to kind of work them in at some of these spots that are a little bit more, which I think it makes it all the more impressive or just kind of matter of fact, I think, with when you talk about Keandre Lambert Smith. Like, a lot of those transfers today, working with the twos, working with the threes, trying to get everything. Keandre Lambert Smith, bang, first one of the first receivers out there. So I think that tells you a lot about him.
All right, we need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join in as we continue here on the Thursday Drive. Give us a call, 334-321-1390.
6-7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in the to The Drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Ferg, while we got a little bit of time, just tell everybody what all you've got going on. It is it's fairly busy.
Yeah, it's busy. It's a big week for us. We got a new logo. We're selling merch. And also we're doing our deal right now where if you want to be a subscriber, new subscribers can get a full year of the Observer for just $45. It's our fall camp deal we've done for the last few years. So between now and the start of football season, if you want to be a new subscriber to The Observer, just go to auburnobserver.com. You don't need a link or a code or anything like that. It'll be an offer to you available wherever you look at it. $45. So today we had, I wrote, I think it was like 2,800 words on practice today. So a ton of stuff in there. Going to do the same tomorrow. We got practice and interviews. Here's the thing. We were talking about the access. We got to go out to practice a lot earlier than expected. I'm going to show up early tomorrow and just be like, we might end up getting out there a whole lot earlier. Got that and player interviews tomorrow. Dan and I are
How much earlier? I mean, we're supposed to get out there.
Well, practice is going to start around 9:30.
Yeah, 9:30.
I was going to say, I feel like we could show up early, but I mean,
where
we?
I might show up at 9 again.
Well, wasn't the viewing window 9 or is the viewing window 10?
I thought the viewing window is
10:15 tomorrow.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah, I know. I show up.
But I asked Shelly because I've got a doctor's appointment at 9.
I show up at 9. Yeah, if you can.
I'm showing up early. But anyway, got Dan and I are going to record a podcast tonight talking all things, first day at camp. I'm sure we'll get into some SUNY late. Also, the Houston game got announced today very busy day here. So got a lot of that this week. So this is a perfect time to subscribe to The Observer, auburnobserver.com. We email everything to you as soon as it drops. So if you were a subscriber today, you got all those practice observations before one. So, I mean, we're going to have a lot of that kind of stuff over the next few weeks.
Yeah, you referenced the question I asked Coach Freeze earlier today about the familiarity or the carryover from last year to this year, and how you have far more players who are who were on last year's team and didn't switch teams in the offseason, didn't have to make all the different adjustments you make in that situation. And I do get the sense that, I mean, you heard it in Hugh's answer, right? Like, they're judging this team on a different kind of curve. They're using a different scale to judge performance this fall versus last fall, because last fall you had the caveat of, well, that guy's new to the team, or that guy's learning, and all these teammates are figuring each other out. It's not necessarily the case anymore. You have new players. You have positions full of new players, like receiver and like defensive line, but it's not the entire roster. It's not every position the way it felt at times last year, and you get the sense that Hugh Freeze and his coaching staff are evaluating things differently because it's not last year and so many of these guys aren't first-year players still learning the system.
No, I mean, they know for the most part what to expect, what they have at each spot and what they can expect. And now they can look at tweaking some things or giving guys looks at different spots, but they're not just trying to fill as many spots as they were a year ago. That was what they were doing last year. It's like you didn't have any idea who the depth chart was. I mean, we can talk about it. I mean, today the depth chart was about what we had seen, what we had expected through the summer. I mean, it wasn't a shock to see Keandre Lambert Smith out there at the top, even though I usually start newcomers near the bottom. I expected him to move up toward the top. But, I mean, the rest of the spots, pretty much guys that had earned it during the spring. And that, again, is where I think when Coach Freeze talked about being comfortable with what they have and where they are, Not doesn't mean they're going to sit back now and just expect, because the expectations are going to be higher, and he expects things to, you know, practice to be much sharper, as he said.
And you've got more, there's more intrigue when you've got position battles all over the place, but I don't necessarily, I'm not sure that a team with position battles all over the place.
I wouldn't be more excited about that right now.
I was going to say, I don't know if a team with position battles all over the place in August is necessarily destined to skyrocket to the top. Yeah. I think more than ever, coaches want to get, you know, except at positions where there's going to be a lot of rotation. You know, I think at positions where you play one guy most of the time, I think coaches want to identify that guy as early as possible and let him go through first team with the, I mean, last year Auburn needed competition at different spots because the coaching staff, they were still figuring out who those guys needed to be. This year, it seems like they've got a much clearer picture of where's everyone slot in on the depth chart. And, you know, you could have questions about this position or that position, but often it's at spots where we'll see if it's all that important who starts and who's the next man up, because there could be pretty, I mean, receiver and defensive line feel like spots where there could be a pretty pretty large group.
Defensive back too,
yeah. I guess that's the one where you would be leaning on relative inexperience on the depth behind behind your top options, and that was Bill's question, right? Is, you know, who's, and I guess did he say Jace? There was a little bit.
No,
of
JD
confusion.
Law. Yeah,
JD
no,
Law is JC Hart. Hart.
Yeah, I like JD Law. Though.
I thought he maybe said JD Love, and Terrence had changed his first name to JD, and I was unaware.
I'd be surprised if he's a corner.
That wouldn't have been the only change.
Big
for
old
Terrence
corner.
Love.
Yeah, Lord. Yeah.
See, now that's the safety. You mentioned Laquan. That's the safety that we've speculated before
could be
finding his way into some sort of hybrid linebacker, slot corner, safety. You know,
he reminds me a lot of Jamie Sherwood, who ended up being a linebacker in the NFL. Like, I just size.
Tyler does.
Yeah, or Terrence.
Terrence, my bad.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I. That's the one I always think about with him. But yeah, Sylvester Smith, Caleb Wooden, we talked about earlier. That feels like a super legit position battle.
That's really the only one that I see
where it's like who's going to be the starter. Yeah, right. Defensive line, they're going to rotate. I do think it's important to identify
who
you can trust.
It's more important to know who your starting safety is, because he's going to play. It's not going to be like, any other play you could rotate.
Yeah, usually your starting safety, you're going to be top five or six on the team in snaps by the end of the year. That's just a position where you play a ton.
It's tools in the toolbox at some other spots, right, where it's like, okay, we've got this guy for this situation, we've got that guy for that situation, depending on what kind of team we're playing and what kind of offense.
I'm very interested to see who the early down guys are on the defensive line and who kind of separates themselves. It's just, you know, I think no disrespect to those guys, it's just a lot of dudes who've been rotational guys at other places, and like, that's fine. You needed that. You needed those numbers. But I'm wondering who's going to kind of separate themselves and step up. I'm not saying who's going to be, you know, they have to be Nick Fairley or Derek Brown, but it would be good for Auburn if they have some early down guys where you feel like, okay, they can hold up at the point of attack. Because one of the things Freeze was talking about today was like, okay, this team last season was not consistent, and that's what they're searching for, that consistency week to week, game to game, practice to practice. One of the biggest areas where you saw that last year is run defense.
Yeah.
There'd be some weeks where they would look great in run defense, and then other weeks where they'd get shredded. And that, I think, finding guys who can consistently hold up at the point of attack will help. I do think Austin Keys being healthy all year long will help with that as well, but you want that defensive front to hold up. Even if it's a guy like Isaiah Rakes or Trill Carter or Jason Jones, where it's just like, buddy, all we really need you to do is eat a double team and hold the line for us and, you know, create havoc, you know, create traffic and stuff like that, so some of these other guys, so our linebackers can fly down and make plays, so our edge rushers can come across and make plays. Like, sometimes you just need to do that role. But as we've also seen in the past for Auburn, it's great when you have a defensive tackle and interior lineman who every now and then can punch through into the backfield and make a big play for you. For now, Auburn's got a bunch of guys that could do that. It's just who's going to separate themselves.
All right, we'll get to our final break here of hour number one. Love for you to join in. Stick with us as we continue with the Thursday Drive.
Take your brand to the next level
on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final few minutes here of hour number one. All right, so back to whether he's JC, JD. I wonder if Hugh Freeze, I bet Hugh has had somebody that JC reminds him of that was called JD, because he called him JD in our press conference that we had for media days.
Yeah.
But JC Hart's a good size. I mean, he's a good size. Might
be blending him in with JD
well.
Rim as well.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe, but I mean, we were talking about decent sized defensive backs, and JC's a good size,
great size, and you know, as a guy who covered JC in high school, like this is a player right here that's got a lot of tools, and it's just a matter of putting it all together at this level, which is a very high and demanding level at this point. But man, super athletic, super long, great work ethic. I think JC Hart and Tom could end up being a steal. He reminded me a lot.
He might be in the picture for a kick returner too.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that would be a good spot
about
for
that.
Him. Yeah.
We were talking about JC back in the high school days. I remember getting phone calls, you know, and
he's phenomenal high school player.
People were talking about, you know, even though he's a small school guy, like, don't, you know, hopefully he doesn't. What he was the player who used to have his mom drive by Jordan Hare right on the way to school because it was like, you know, as part of the dream to beat Auburn someday. And yeah, I mean, you'd love to hear a story like that pay off. And on top of the sentimentality of it, like, he's also, you know, he had other SEC offers.
Might
like,
be your guy, fourth corner.
Yeah,
right
this
now,
guy,
yeah.
this guy could be on the field playing defensive back. Mm-hmm. You know, he could be the guy, you know, backing up one or the other, whichever side Kite is on. I feel like those are your next two up. At defensive.
I mean, you talk about it like you're like, okay, some people may be listening and be like, okay, well, how important is a fourth corner? It's like, Champ Anthony was your fourth corner last year. Mm-hmm. I mean, and you got to think of it big picture as well. You get those guys ready because they could be in a year or two like the guys.
Hey, they could be a play away from being the third, who is very, very important, because you don't want to play your corners 60 mm-hmm. snaps a game. You'd like to at least give them a little bit of a blow.
Yeah. They're in a good position depth-wise at that spot. It's just, I think, kind of like defensive line. It's like, all right, who's going to emerge? Who's going to be found to be reliable? And once they do that, I think you're in a much better spot moving forward. One thing we haven't talked about yet today that I thought was interesting, the amount of rotation and who was going where at tight end. So a lot of 12 personnel today in work. You know, you get moving guys around, but the most common tight end pairing was Rivaldo Fairweather and Brandon Frazier. And I feel like Brandon Frazier's done a really good job here this offseason of making a move up that depth chart. Not to say he's completely replaced Luke Deal. I think Luke Deal just has a different role. But there are some sets.
Player coach? Is that sort of the Luke Deal after?
I
love Luke.
I think attached tight end in certain sets, I think you'd like him, you know, for more for that.
Wings listener, Luke Deal.
There's going to be times, I think, this season where you are going to see, like, and it's not by emergency because they don't have any other options. I think you're going to see some times this year where Auburn may roll out 12 personnel, but you will see Rivaldo, because you saw it today, Rivaldo Fairweather as a big slot. And he played some of that last year. Obviously, had to split out wide at times as well, but I think there could be very easily scenarios this season where I'm thinking red zone or something like that, where Auburn rolls out a personnel grouping that's got Cam Coleman and maybe Keandre Lambert-Smith, maybe a Perry Thompson or somebody like that, and Rivaldo Fairweather and Brandon Frazier. And it's just like when you talk about winning one-on-one battles, that would be huge. I mean, you just have such tremendous size out there. And I think good for Brandon Frazier. I mean, Brandon Frazier is one of those guys, kind of like Eugene Asante as well, like easily could have been like, okay, I'm going to go in the portal. This is obviously not for me.
No question.
Because it's every offseason it's been, is this going to be the year Brandon Frazier breaks out? Is this going to be the year Brandon Frazier breaks out? And last year he had a couple touchdowns. He had a better year last year. But he always struck me as a guy that just felt like, okay, you know, it would make sense if he jumped in the portal and went back home to Texas and found some more playing time somewhere else. But he stayed with it, and right now I think he's your number two tight end, and your number two tight end in certain sets in this offense can end up being a pretty valuable player.
Guys who play as infrequently as Luke Deal or as Brendan Frazier did the first couple years of his college football career, sometimes they walk away from the sport. Like, yep. Sometimes they become GAs, like Asante said he was going to do when it wasn't working out for him at Auburn, and instead he's out there on the football field, and maybe Frazier has, in his final year of college football, maybe he's in position to play more than ever. What Auburn does at tight end beyond Fairweather is another thing to look for between Deal and Frazier and Mike O'Reilly, who could be a factor as well.
All right, we are out of time here in hour number one. Again, day one of fall football practice. We'll talk more about Hugh Freeze's comments, what we saw, and, yeah, some other things as well. Again, love for you to join in hour number two, which is coming up.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in. What word did I just say?
Well, we were just intense fantasy baseball discussion during the break.
Well, I mean, all kinds of things.
Fetty's the only guy Drew has rights to, though, because he lost the roster spot. Drew doesn't get anybody else in the trade.
No. That's fine. No.
I'm in third. That's right. I just want everyone to know that. I'm in third place.
I'm falling fast. My team is sliding.
Can't get any steals. Power baseball. Three true outcomes for these. Boys.
When I had a couple of Marlins that were pretty good, and of course the Marlins unloaded everybody, so they didn't. That's about all they had that was pretty good. Hour number two of The Drive. That's all the fantasy baseball.
I'm gonna go watch the Marlins play this weekend.
Yeah, that's who the Braves have got right now.
Yeah, four games.
Yeah, we were just talking about the deals and on to victory heads.
The $5,000 Tim Hudson and Butch Thompson adventure.
By the way, Braves, if they win tonight, six games behind the Phillies would be the closest they've been in almost 2 months.
That's crazy because they haven't even been playing that well lately. But the
Phillies have been really bad.
Bills are slumping.
They're running into some buzzsaws right now in terms of like contenders. I think they have a Mariners series coming up.
Their big bats are struggling too right now. Just like the Braves have been for so long. And Matt
Olson's heating up,
starting to come around a little bit.
Austin Riley hitting the ball.
Division races are heating up in all three of the NL divisions.
Braves just went on the road.
Your Dodgers are sliding back a little
Padres,
bit.
And the Padres now have won the season series. So if it's a tie, the Padres win the National League West. So the Dodgers, you know, they're 4.5 games up, but it's, you know,
Braves just went
on the road and after being down 0-2 in the series against the Mets, came back and split that series, mm-hmm. and then just took 2 out of 3 from the NL Central leaders. So
I would
feel a little better right now.
I'd want to see who's
play the Rockies next week too. I'm excited.
I want to see who's got the Rocks, the Nationals, and the Marlins a lot on the schedule down the stretch, because those teams have waved the white flag and
Reds
chance.
Aren't playing too well either.
No, the Reds aren't playing all that well.
I believe the Braves have a pretty good little run in here.
Let's see who the Marlins. That is a really tough.
Man, they're not even a good AAA team.
No, they're not.
All right, we're just underway here in hour number two of the Thursday Drive. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. It's day one of Auburn fall football practice. We were all over there for Hugh Freeze's press conference and then the long viewing window today. We'll get another opportunity tomorrow. We'd love for you to join in here in hour number two of The Drive and the second hour of the show, as usual, brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And you can join us by calling The Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number, 334-321-1390. And Bill, is hanging on as we get things started here in the second hour. Hey, Bill.
Hey, guys. I was wondering, you know, and I know it's just shoulder pads and helmets, but the appearance of the what you call your front line guys, your first or second string or what or that whatever, and your offensive line, how were they, what did they look like? What were your impressions of that?
I think this offensive line is pretty cohesive. It is a bigger group than it was last season.
It looks like an SEC line.
It looks more like an SEC offensive line. I do wonder what would happen if you had an injury. You're probably going to have an injury at some point up front with that offensive line. That defensive line, really like the edge spots. I think the edge spots are really talented. Pretty physical guys. We were talking about the tackles a little bit earlier. In the interior defensive line, you've got bodies, you've got experience. Just kind of figuring out who's gonna separate themselves from that pack. But I do think Auburn's offensive line last season, they had some games where they notably struggled. I'm not going to deny that. But, you know, statistically, one of the better offensive line seasons for Auburn in several years. They've got some continuity. They've got some depth. I think they're going to be able to build off of that. Defensive front, I'm really – outside of the edge spots, and that those are important. Who on the interior is going to step up is the big question, and I think it's a little too early to kind of try to determine that one.
Staying on the offensive line for a second, where do they list Percy at? Like what's
6'7", 340-something?
45, maybe?
Just an enormous who's the biggest tackle in Auburn history?
Like King Dunlap.
Yeah, I guess – I was going to say
– he wasn't – I mean
– Zier?
I mean, King was the tallest, but I mean, probably wasn't. I don't know that he was 350.
I mean,
he was pretty big.
I mean, Percy.
Percy is listed 6'7", 355.
Yeah. I mean, he is enormous, and it's a dude who's played 25 or so SEC games, started 10, 12 of them, I think it was, at Mississippi State the last two seasons. Aldridge has known him since, just like with Too Tall. These are guys that he was in contact with. You know, it's helpful. If your offensive line coach knows the Mississippi Junior College ranks well, because sometimes NFL players pop out of the Mississippi Junior College ranks, and Auburn has two of them two former junior college tackles in Too Tall and Percy Lewis, and they both look like they fit the part cosmetically.
Now, let's see. One thing we didn't mention, Bill, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. One thing we didn't mention, Tyler Johnson not out there today, so.
He was.
Well, I mean. Well,
not going early, fully, but right. He was. Yeah, he was out there. He was out there early.
Well, I mean, Hugh had said he's going to be held back a little bit. So
hamstring. They
saw
weren't
some of
in
Ronan Chambers at both sides, at both left and right tackle.
Yeah, I think they're going to move him around a decent bit, which is what he did at Akron. So the depth is there, and I do think the offensive line looks like to be in better shape, Bill, than we saw last year.
That's good. And, you know, we can avoid a few injuries early. You know, Todd Johnson, a couple of those guys, I think, can step up and help out. So I like where we're at. I just like it. We just got to avoid a few injuries. By the way, Dan, you're a single successful radio personality. Why don't you lay that $5,000 up and take that trip up to Atlanta for the with the baseball coach?
No, because it was
today, and he had the obligation, or you know, he felt it was his responsibility to be over there covering football practice.
No, I've been actually, you know what, that is one of the ballparks that still lets me go in. So I could have gone to Truist.
Even though the last time he was at Truist, I think he might have died on the way back.
You know,
to the parking.
My accountant, I wasn't the only one. Yeah. I believe we had casualties that weekend. Now and the I'll check with my accountant and see if that'd be a prudent move, Bill. No, you know, I think that would be a really fun thing for folks who want to hang out, watch a baseball game with Tim and Coach. But no, that's. I decided to invest my money elsewhere.
Okay. All right, guys, enjoy the show. Wiggle.
Appreciate the call, Bill.
Also, I'm not supposed to be contributing to these things as a journalist. You know what I mean? It's an On to Victory's, you know, a collective sort of, you know, there's some ethical.
Well, you know, it's not quite what we learned today.
Oh, about the athletic.
I didn't think about that. We were chatting with our own and
folks we know who work in the department
and did not realize that they cannot contribute to On to Victory because it is a collective. Now I said I know that's not a problem for Tigers Unlimited, things like that.
It's also
different.
And I guess it's not a problem
to the athletes.
Yes, so. And I guess that's I would think my question would be, is that true of all university employees? And I don't know the answer to that. I would think it's maybe just athletic department employees are ones, but that's I'd be dicey about university employee. I don't know.
Maybe we shouldn't have talked about
it. Well, I mean, you know what? Auburn is probably not the only collective.
Oh, no. That employees might think of contributing to.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to university employees and collectives. I would think it's...
I would guess it's not a problem.
Yeah, I would
but
imagine...
When you're talking about NCAA, guessing is a very dangerous thing to do.
I imagine it would be athletic department employees only, maybe across the...
Because did I don't know, you may not have known this. I don't think I've mentioned this in quite a while. Years ago, I had to deal with the NCAA when I was in Montgomery. When I worked in Montgomery, I contacted recruits. I was working for Colonial Broadcasting, and we were covering recruiting, and there was not you didn't have websites, you didn't have podcasts. I mean, you had basically newsletters, and so
those will never work.
Yeah, well, but I mean, you had a couple of guys doing national newsletters. You had Forrest Davis doing his thing in the Southeast, and then folks that just sort of did it on their own. So I mean, following recruiting, I spent a lot of time. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because it was generally like from late football season until February, and didn't really worry about it much of the rest of the time because that wasn't the time that there was a whole lot going on recruiting-wise. It was just one signing period, and it was in February. So I'd contact recruits and their coaches and things like that about recruiting, and that was fine. And then I left there and was back here and got on with the university. I stopped contacting recruits. I knew that was something. No, you can't do that as a university employee affiliated with. You can't be contacting recruits. So all I would do then is I would have other people that did that on, or I would talk about what guys like Jason or Brian were writing. Mm-hmm. Well, I had someone who was also. A university employee that didn't think that was right, and contacted the NCAA, and I got a letter shutting me down. Said I could not talk about recruiting. Or
that law is still on the books to this day. Bill is not allowed to talk about.
No,
recruiting.
No. Okay, well, no. This was interesting though. That I stopped.
That's what I'm hearing.
That I stopped that or. I wouldn't be credentialed anywhere. Now I've been, and we were talking about this today. I've been credentialed. I actually underestimated Dan. I've been.
It's not the Ruby anniversary.
No. It's past that. Wow. Well, it's
Diamond coming up.
It is actually. We were talking 40, and it's actually 45.
Coral.
45 since 1979.
No big deal that I know. I know the anniversary.
And it's like, so the threat of losing my credentials.
29
because I was working not in the athletic department, but working at the university. So I had to write letters, and I spoke with the NCAA, and I wrote them, and I explained the situation, and they said, "Oh, that's okay. You can't contact, or you can't ask questions of coaches and broadcast what they say about their prospects." I wasn't going to do that. So that was okay. But it was crazy because for a little while, I thought
you were banned by the NCAA.
What am I going to do?
Indianapolis
because a lot of people knew me as somebody who followed recruiting, mm-hmm. and it's like, well, I can't even talk about what other people say, or I can't have somebody on. So that's why I said with the NCAA, it's very dangerous to just guess.
Is
probably going to be all right.
I did not know 29, but that's because there isn't a specific gift for 29. It's after I think the first 15.
After 15.
The first 15 have individual specific, and then it's like 20th, 25th, 30th, 35th, et cetera.
I guess I should read up on those at some point.
Yeah, as you approach one.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. 1 month was Monday. So
congratulations.
There's probably one for that.
Yeah.
There is a
we went to dinner last night. Is that a good enough?
There is a porcelain anniversary. There is a
that sounds very fragile.
I was wrong. By the way, Bill, I was wrong. Sapphire is 45, not coral. Coral is 35. Sapphire is 45. But it's
coral like the
stone. Oh. They're pearl like
under the. You're talking.
I was saying like a reef. Like a reef.
Yes. Coral, ruby, and sapphire are.
Going to take you scuba diving.
So they're playing somewhere. By the way, I saw the coral reefers are.
Coral, ruby, and sapphire.
Yeah.
Pretty good name for a girl group.
Oh my!
I believe it.
I think we need to get to break.
Yeah.
Come on in and join us 334-321-1390 as we continue here on the Thursday Drive.
Attention large, or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Coming up on 5:20 here on this Thursday afternoon. Oh, by the way, Suni Lee picks up another medal. You mentioned her a little earlier, Justin. I guess if you didn't watch earlier, right, you can tune your radio and I will give you 15 seconds now. All right, Suni picking up the bronze today as Simone Biles wins the gold.
Yep.
The Brazilian, apparently, I didn't see it.
Oh, there's nobody worried about spoilers for the Olympics.
Well, there are some. I'm telling you, there are some.
Well, it's
all right, we're back now, so we won't talk about it anymore.
It's happening, yeah. No. I think this is a big. I mean, you're getting email alerts when these things are happening from like major news outlets.
I sort of ruined it for my wife today because she had seen the headline but didn't know the details.
I'll tell you this. Are we talking about like?
I say we're talking about the results.
All right, so
sorry, folks.
So here's the thing: all around title today, Suni Lee seventh after the first rotation, fifth after the second rotation, tied for fourth after the third rotation. She goes into floor. She has to hit the best floor score of her Olympic career in order to medal, and she does. She drills it, and you watch the whole thing. It's incredible. But that floor routine, the first pass. When she sticks that first pass, it is one of the coolest moments I think I've seen watching gymnastics, watching her. She knew she nailed it, and it was like from then on it was like took over. But I mean, the pressure. You think about all the pressure on her to perform. You dug yourself a hole. She digs out of it. And, you know, our buddy Justin Lee, who does a great job covering gymnastics from an Auburn perspective, he was pointing out today, he's like, look, bronze medal, she medals, period. It's – fantastic.
It is. She's now,
I think all three of the medalists today were repeats. Heading into today, only nine women in the history of gymnastics had ever medaled twice in the all-around. So very elite club there. But it's like if she gets silver, it's one of the biggest upsets ever. If she gets gold, the world's probably going to end because something happened to Simone, basically.
Simone had to come from behind.
So for her to get a medal, really cool. I mean, like I said, she is now one of just 12 gymnasts ever in women's gymnasts to medal twice in the all around. She's got a gold medal for Team USA. They pulled off the redemption arc from 3 years ago. Really, really cool story. And then yeah, I mean, again, if you haven't seen it yet, just go pull up that floor routine. Everything else was great.
It'll be on tonight.
She killed it on bars as always, but. That floor routine, the first pass, and if you don't know what a pass is when they run across and they do all the tricks and land right on the floor routine. That first pass is one of the coolest, most like I completely nailed it moments of I've seen from an athlete. Really, really cool stuff.
Awesome. Definitely looking forward to seeing that because I missed it when it happened this afternoon.
Yeah, I don't know if y'all talked about it yesterday. The other big story today in the Olympics is. You now have an all-time record holder for most medals, because I mean, watching the swimming is hilarious. Like when you have one person just kill it throughout, and Katie Ledecky
she's already talking 28.
The hilarious like she finishes her race and no one's even in the frame with her.
What does she have? The top 20 all time?
Top 20 all time in the 15. But yeah, she the U.S. women got silver today in a relay, so she is now the most decorated female athlete in Olympics history. And like you said, she's still talking about probably running it back. Done. It is incredible.
Well,
when
you're this dominant, she'll probably still be pretty.
Been a fun Olympics though. I mean, I love watching the Olympics. The rugby finish from earlier this week is one of the coolest things I've seen in a while. But yeah, Auburn fans, go check out that SUNY performance. It'll make you proud for sure.
All right, 24 minutes after 5 o'clock, we've got calls holding, and let's get right to them.
Oh, I didn't know we had calls. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Thanks for hanging on, Tex. How you doing?
Sorry, Tex.
I was barely hanging on. Anyway, just a joke. Hey, by the way, coral, ruby, and sapphire can be found on Victory Drive in Columbus.
I was going to make that joke. I was going to make a similar joke, like so I'm glad, somebody else got that.
I went with the girl group instead, Tex.
It's a girl group.
You're welcome. As a redneck that grew up in Columbus, speaking of passing, my question, Bill, I don't know if you got it yesterday when I sent it to you.
Yeah, I did.
Was quarterback accuracy.
Today?
So my question I watched some video of the throws. To me, it still seems like we don't throw the ball till we're out of our break. Is that intentional in that drill? Or I just don't understand. If we're running on RPO, I thought it was you can pretty much know where you're going to go with the ball and throw guys open. Why would we be waiting till guys come out of breaks? That's my question.
I don't have an answer for you.
Yeah, it depends on the route, but yeah, I mean, I do think that's something that anticipation and timing can definitely be improved. That's something you felt like Auburn kind of struggled with at times last year, for sure, especially with the RPO. We talked about Thorne today getting better in that area, but yeah, that's something. I'll tell you, Tex, I had not thought about that. I'm going to keep a closer eye on that in practices moving forward, because I get what you're saying, and I definitely have noticed some of that now going back through stuff in my head.
Yeah, it was 5 to 7 yard hook routes,
mm-hmm.
and they're turned around, and the ball's when they're turning around, the ball's barely out of their hand,
mm-hmm.
and they're throwing the ball probably 20 yards, you know, across the field and down a little bit. So it just. I thought RPO was designed to get the ball out quick,
yeah.
get the ball to a spot where somebody can do something with it. And if you're running a 7-yard hook, they're going to catch up to you if you don't deliver the ball until after they break open.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Anyway, just a thought. So, physically, always ask this question. Is you mentioned several of the players, but overall as a team, looked in shape, looked ready to go, attitude was good. I'm assuming on the first day it would have been a good attitude.
I mean, with the caveat that I feel like that's what you're going to hear across every SEC team right now is you're going to. I mean, if you don't look, and I know there's different levels of in shape and ready to go, but if you don't look in some degree ready to go today. Like, I mean, you've had months to get ready for today. Like if it's lifeless and full of and I guess you can explain it away as, you know, as rust or whatever. But I would say most teams feel right now.
Didn't see anybody that looked just gassed today. I mean, that's
would have been understandable
with the weather. I mean the heat index at 2:30 today was a 109. So, I mean, you would, you know, usually if there's somebody who isn't ready, you would have noticed it after they'd been out there an hour plus. So I didn't see any of that.
Well, that's good to hear. So size-wise in the secondary, I heard you talking about the receivers earlier. Do we look a little bit bigger on the corners, a little bit bigger in the middle and at the safety?
Definitely. I mean, you've got some options now that I think are having to kind of step up due to the fact that you've had so much turnover at your DB spots. We talked about J.C. Hart earlier, how big he is, 6'2". Terrence Love is massive over the middle of the field at safety. I think there's another corner that I'm blanking on, right, the exact size on, Bill.
Well, I'm going to say, you know, JC's good size. But, I mean, Keontae's a good size corner. Remember, he was your nickel last year. Champs put on about 15 pounds.
Spooty's pretty good size.
From last year. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't think they have anybody under 180 out there at the corner.
Well, I'm looking forward to it for people that may live somewhere around 417 miles away from the stadium. Five home games in a row is a tough ask, but I know somebody that's going to make that ask, and will be there. So looking forward to it, and not just been busy and not had a chance to keep up with things. So I appreciate all the talk, including the I did not know about the Olympic information. So I appreciate that too.
Hey, there you go.
All right, guys. All right, y'all take care.
All right, Tex, appreciate the call.
Experience 402 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive, final segment here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. And yet, Ferg, you mentioned a little earlier Auburn sending out a release, the official announcement about the two-game series against the University of Houston, another top 10 matchup for this. This has got to be the most difficult schedule in Auburn basketball history.
Got to be. I mean, you've got Houston now, preseason number one on T-Rank, Duke's number two. You know, when you start throwing it in, I saw a stat today that was like there's a chance Auburn plays five of the last eight teams that were in the Elite Eight last year. yeah, because Tennessee and Alabama are going to be pretty good again this year as well. That Maui field could give you UConn, could give you a really good Iowa State team. Michigan State is going to be pretty loaded again this year. So, like, this is a schedule that is going to be pretty daunting. I think there's strategy, obviously, behind it. I think we saw last year with Alabama, they put up a brutal schedule, didn't do very hot in non-conference play. It didn't hurt them at all.
No.
Which I think is something. But I go back to something Bruce Pearl told us back in June when we were in Hoover. He's like, hey, there could be a chance where we could be the underdog three or four straight games. But what it says is I'm confident in my team. So they're going to go play Houston in the Toyota Center, NBA Arena. Should be a really cool environment there. By the way, that is Auburn's second off week in football. So that Saturday is open, Auburn fans, if you want to make the trip or if you just want to watch. Just know that one, you don't have to worry about football, you know, coinciding with that. And the return trip, some point in 2025, going back to Birmingham. So Auburn this year going to Birmingham to play Purdue, and then they'll be back in Birmingham next year to play the other half of the the Houston series. So really good format here for the Tigers. And Houston, that Houston team is going to be on paper preseason number one or number two by pretty much everybody. They're loaded. They bring back a whole lot of guys from a very, very strong team.
It's a Houston game that adds to the list what you've got. I mean, the possibility of seeing UConn in Maui. You've got the Duke game we know about. There's the Purdue game we know about. There's talk of another game against a major conference opponent. Well, we know Auburn's going to play in Atlanta. It's just a matter of who's going to be the opponent for that major conference. What major conference team will be your opponent in Atlanta? But we were talking about a little bit earlier this week, Justin, that it's not an out of conference schedule that you would build as a coach if you weren't confident in your team and what they could do with it. You wouldn't want your team to get their heads kicked in over and over again in November and December to get them ready for conference play. You'd think, yes, this is an opportunity to pick up some needle-moving wins. I also have a team that can maybe win some of these games. We'll see what it looks like, but you wouldn't. It would be surprised to set a team up for an out-of-conference schedule this ambitious if Bruce and the other coaches didn't have a lot of trust in what's coming back and what they've brought in JP Pegues and the other new additions.
Oh, absolutely. It does show confidence. It portrays that they think this is a team that deserves to be playing these kind of games, because this is a team that they think is going to be among one of the best in college basketball this year. And why not put yourself at the highest level? It's going to get you prepared for what should be another just meat grinder of an SEC schedule.
Auburn has wrapped up its summer workouts and basketball. Just some quick thoughts on what you've seen, especially from the new guys.
Yeah, I think for Auburn, they're going to really like the additions of Miles Kelly and J.P. Pegues. Those guys have been as advertised as scorers, as shooters early on. I think Tahat Pettiford's looked really good early on. I mean, his explosiveness and his athleticism, I think it's one of those things that translates immediately. We were talking about earlier with like Perry Thompson at wide receiver. It's hard for a freshman to come in and play at a high level right away, but when you are as gifted and skilled as an athlete as he is, you're in a good spot. Also been really impressed with some of the stuff I've seen from Turtle Hudson as well. I think he's going to be a valuable guy off the bench for him because he can do a number of different things for Auburn at a high level.
And I keep hearing about Ja'Kai Howard's highlights.
Ja'Kai Howard's human highlight reel. I mean, he is going to be really, really fun. Probably the best dunker Auburn's had, in a long time. And that's some high praise considering some of the guys they've had. But his athleticism is just very, very freaky. And the other thing for Auburn is like, oh, by the way, they return an All-American center. And, he continues to play really, really well. Dylan Carwell off the bench, too, for them. I mean, you're talking about one of the most impactful defenders in the SEC last season coming off the bench there. And I think Auburn fans should be really excited about year two, the potential of Denver Jones and Chad Baker Mazzari. Mm-hmm. Now that they've got that under their belts. We saw them, both of them, late last. I mean, Chad had a pretty good year all the way around. But we saw Denver especially – really the last 10 or so games of the regular season, Chaney Johnson as well.
I was going to say, there's three guys who were making the first taste of SEC basketball last year, and now they're in position.
And all those guys finished the season, regular season, into the tournament play on a high. So I think it's a good sign.
Great stuff as always. Justin, before we run out of time, let everybody know once again, you got a great deal going on.
Yep. Yeah, auburnobserver.com, $45 for your first year. If you're a new subscriber, just go to auburnobserver.com, check it out. We email you everything we got, whether it's a newsletter or a podcast on all things Auburn football, men's basketball. A lot of practice observations today, more coming tomorrow. So get on board and you'll get them straight in your email inbox.
That sounds good. We will, you're going to be over there. I'll try to make it over tomorrow. I'll be there in time for the interviews that we've got tomorrow, but I got something else I've got to take care of.
Do we know who we're talking to? We're going to get surprised
We're just going to find out tomorrow. And you'll get to hear about it here on The Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.